Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Sporta Kings podcast. On this pod, we cover the late pick five from Tampa Bay Downs on Saturday, March 6th. This is show number 110, March 5th, 2021. I'm Scott Carson, founder of Sporta Kings, and I'm joined by my co-host, Hall of Fame handicapper, Chris Larmy. Chris, it's a big derby prep weekend. Are you excited?
Yes, spring is in the air. Three derby preps this weekend. I'm definitely getting a whiff of derby fever early on here. And I think it's shaping up to be a pretty interesting derby, as it always is. So now we start getting into the more serious preps here in the final. Let's see, what are we in? Beginning of March, so final 2 months. So yeah, I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah, I got a text after last week's Fountain of Youth. Greatest honor. Derby winner. so great. Clearly, yeah. People are getting their fever, the fever.
Yeah, my text on him would be greatest honor, Belmont winner. He runs just like a Belmont horse, not a Derby horse. He's too much of a grindy, plotty type, but I think he'll be big in the Belmont.
Yeah, I'm not even going to project. I'm not going to project any of my Triple Crown plays because it all depends on how they come up to the race. But it is fun. It is fun for people to have these opinions. And what excites me the most is everybody gets all excited about like essential quality, greatest honor. And, you know, we didn't even have what's probably going to be the most impressive prep race, which is the San Felipe this weekend. So, you know, everybody starts taking sides, and you know it could turn out to be one of those derbies where we have a 5-1 favorite or 9-2 favorite.
Yeah, definitely could be. I mean, we'll wait and see. Like you said, now is when it really gets serious. And if some horse is really impressed in these final few months, then they might emerge, especially if it's a Baffert horse. I mean, people, you got to put a little context around these things, like essential quality. When was the last time a Breeders' Cup juvenile champ, how often do they win in the last 20 or 30 years? How often do the two-year-old champ win the Derby in the last 10 or 20 years? Doesn't happen very often. So, you know, just because they were maybe the best horse as a two-year-old doesn't necessarily mean they'll be the best horse as a three-year-old. So it'll be interesting to see these last few preps what happens.
And are you playing any of these live bankroll tournaments? I know there's one at Naira, there's one at Express Bet. That's the ultimate betting challenge, which some people are actually attending from Gulfstream. Are you getting in on any of that action?
The Express Bet one, I haven't had a chance to look at the races yet, but if I really like the races, I might play, except for it's a $3,000 buy-in. So I'm going to have to really like the races to get involved. But if I do, you know, I'll probably take a shot. Well, I will answer. I'll mention there is a free contest this weekend that many of our listeners should, if they're not aware of it already, should be if they're interested in joining the NHC Tour, if they're already a tour member and they want to start accumulating some points and maybe even get lucky and qualify for the NHC Tour. They're having the first free contest to all tour players on horseplayers.com this week. And I think several of the races that we're covering today are part of that contest.
Yes, I will be entering that contest. And in fact, I've already looked at least half of the races. So that one I should be able to handle, but I probably won't have time to put up 3K and make a serious run at one of these live bankroll tourneys.
Yeah, the NHC contest, I haven't looked at what the races are, but other than I know that there are, they usually have Gulfstream and Santa Anita and Tampa, probably Aqueduct and maybe Laurel are the horse tracks that they use. I haven't really looked to see what races they picked.
You hit it. You hit everything on the head except for Laurel. No Laurel. Thankfully, there's actually 15 races, and I think six are from Santa Anita.
Oh, wow. So, how many of it? What races from Tampa did they pick, or did they have any from Tampa? I'll have to look. I should have just looked it up.
You should have just done what I'm doing right now.
Yeah. Probably would be a better way to approach this than trying to guess my way through it.
Well, they're doing the 8th at Tampa, which is the hardest race of the sequence, in my opinion. And they're also doing the 11th. So it's a little disappointing that they've only chosen two of the five from Tampa, because there's some pretty interesting stakes here.
I think the reason they did that was that there's rain in the forecast. They probably didn't want to pick the turf races, would be my guess.
Oh, is there rain in the forecast?
Because unfortunately, it's supposed to be raining all day during the races tomorrow. I don't know if that'll, not a heavy rain, but I don't know if that would possibly, you know, force races off the turf, or if the track could get sloppy. There's definitely rain in the forecast.
Okay, well, I just assumed that it was going to be sunny in Tampa. So
you should know every time we do a track, there's weather. There's a chance for bad weather.
It says rain likely, chance of rain 80%. Rainfall near a quarter of an inch, though. I mean, when they say that, I don't worry about it.
Okay.
A quarter of an inch is that just means they don't have to sprinkle.
Yeah, it's just in Florida. Sometimes you get these hellacious downpours when it rains. So that's the only concern. It might be all of a quarter of an inch all in, you know, 5 minutes.
Well, that is true, but I think that's more true of Southern Florida as opposed to the Gulf, the upper Gulf region. Although don't quote me on that. We could have some Floridians that are like, are you kidding? It's hell up here.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to, I'm certainly no expert on the weather in Florida.
I think it is typically, it's a little bit more rambunctious, the weather down in the Miami Fort Lauderdale area.
All right. Well, let's just cross our fingers that they stay on the turf and it doesn't get, sloppy. They can have a fast track and and they stay on the turf.
Play in the Sport of Kings NHC qualifier starting every month. Each month, the top 50 players who are NHC Tour members advance to Round 2, which is Breeders' Cup weekend. In that final, 450 players will duke it out, playing all 14 Breeders' Cup races. Two people will win a seat to the NHC, and the top 100 will get Tour points. Join the NHC Tour before any monthly Round 1 begins. If you join the Tour, you could win up to 20 seats to the NHC in free contests. For only $50, it's the best deal in racing. If you sign up for the Tour, use promo code SPORTOFKINGS so we get credit. If you haven't signed up for our free contest with free DRFPPs, go to sportofkings.net right now. Thank you and good luck. And we have a special guest. He's one of the race callers for Monmouth Park and the official race caller of Colonial Downs. He has a podcast that has been running for years. He has a novel called Southbound that is a story of horse racing. He also has an award show that has been retired, but would earn a Beamy Award for Best Twitter Awards Show. He's Jason Beam. Jason, welcome to the Sport of Kings pod.
I appreciate you guys having me on. It's good to talk with you.
All right. Well, really looking forward to hearing you handicap, because the last time I heard your show, you gave out one race pick for the whole day, and that was North County Guy in a turf race at Santa Anita. And I was pretty impressed.
Yeah, handicapping is not my greatest strength in the Sport of Kings, but we give it a shot, and so I'm looking forward to it. It was a fun card to look through, just because we had big fields and some interesting races. So I'm looking forward to it.
And Jason, just for the folks at home, for their edification, what is your handicapping methodology? What do you use, and what's your strength?
I've used BrisNet PPs for quite a while now, since before I started working for Churchill. So I've had people say like, oh, you just use those because you work in. I said, no, I've been using them for a long time. So I use those as my kind of primary PPs, and then optics as a pace, you know, scenario thing with their plot. And then I love looking at the optics notes as well. So those are kind of my two main ones. And then I'm a big replay guy. So in the end, I always kind of default to that, maybe a little more so than the past performances.
Cool. Chris, did you have any questions for Jason?
Yeah, since you've called races, Jason, we've had Travis Stone on before, and I asked him this question as a, you know, his experience as a race caller. How does that inform your handicapping? Does that make you a better handicapper, you think? Or being a handicapper, does that make you a better race caller? I'm just curious as to what your take is on that.
I'm sure it does. I never have made like the real connection to it. I try not to over handicap races that I call, because I want to actually report on what's going on out there, not as much of, you know, what I think should be going on. I mean, certainly you want to know who the likely, you know, pace setters are and the closers. And if it's a race of some stature, you obviously need to know a little bit more of the backstory. But I always view it more of being a live play-by-play reporter, and as opposed to, you know, in regular sports, you have the play-by-play person and the color analyst, and the color analyst is usually there to give the random facts and context stuff, whereas the play-by-play is doing just that. And so I've always viewed it a little more from the play-by-play standpoint. I think it's helped me watching races as a handicapper has helped me identify how horses are traveling better within a race, and kind of, you know, how the jockeys are, you know, we're so focused at looking at the jockeys because of the colors. That's how you memorize the names, that you really get a pretty good sense of how a jock feels the horse is traveling. And so those are a lot of the cues that you use in announcing a race. And I think some of those come from watching so many races as a horse player.
Cool.
All right. Well, we're doing the late pick five from Tampa, which is not the last five races from Tampa. It is the 7th through 11th. And thankfully they've left out that, that maiden on the turf in the last race, even though sometimes those races can be really good. But this is mostly stakes races. Four of the five are stakes races. The first one is the Columbia Stakes. It's a mile on turf, purse of $75,000 for three-year-olds. And Jason is our guest. We'd like to have you go first on this race.
It was fun. I was looking at it and I realized that at first my initial top pick didn't have a rider listed, and I thought that can't be a good thing to win a stakes race. But I do kind of like the 9-horse Mira Mission, who I just thought, you know, put a couple of wins together, both at Gulfstream Park, and doing it from off the pace in a race I think is going to have a decent bit of early contention using the optics plot. I mean, the one from the inside certainly looks to be speedy and was able to cross over from the 12 post last time. But I just think it's a race that sets up for someone to come from off the pace. I did like the 3 a little bit, Crew Dragon. I know we're going to talk more about some of the other contenders, but just from a top pick standpoint, I thought that if the race fell apart just a little bit, I thought the 9 could be a decent one.
Mira Mission, definite contender. 6-1 morning line. Will it be that high? I don't know. And will he actually run in the race?
Yeah.
Without having a rider called, I would guess they just are trying to figure out a rider, since Junior Alvarado does go to Crew Dragon. Chris, where did you land here?
Well, I like a horse a lot in here, but there's a catch, because the horse has to draw in from the also eligibles to make another race. So maybe Mira Mission doesn't go, and number 13, Blue Cat, gets into the race. This horse to me is a standout, other than the post position, which is a little dicey, but the horse goes for Brandon Walsh, who wins, based on what I saw in Formulator, only 3% of the time with a first time starter in turf routes. So clearly when he sends them out in turf routes, they're not fully cranked up in their debut. This horse won easily in his first start in a turf route. And Brandon Walsh, with last out winners in turf routes, is 30%. So this horse, he goes from, he never sends them out fully cranked, to when they come off a win, they really perform well in their next out. So from a trainer angle, this horse looks really good. And also just from the figure it earned in its debut is good enough to win. So a lot of positives on the 13A Blue Cat if it draws into the race. There's another horse I like And that's 20-1 on the morning line too, by the way. I doubt that's what you'll get, but you'll probably get a decent price on the 13. I'll wait and see, let Scott make a pick before I weigh in, but there's a horse I like that it's in the main body of the race as well. But I'm really hoping that Blue Cat can draw in, because I think that horse is a great horse, maybe even single to start off the pick five.
Woo! Well, I will definitely use the horse if it gets in. And Brendan Walsh is 3-4 at Tampa this meet, which is pretty great. I actually landed on the same horse as Jason, Mira Mission. I loved the way the horse looked in both of its races. I picked it in its last race, and it only went off at 2-1, but it had been a high morning line kind of horse. And everybody sort of glommed onto the horse. Like, I was watching TVG and they were all like, yeah, Mira Mission looks really good. And next thing you know, it goes off as the favorite. But it did look really good. And I think that given that it was it won a maiden claiming race and then was an optional claimer, that may make the price as high as 6-1. So that's where I'll sit, and I look forward to hearing what other horses you guys like.
Go ahead and jump in, Jason, if you have another horse.
I mean, the one thing I love that comes up in certain races, it comes up in a lot of races, is when you get a common race and the 1 and the 3, who are both, you know, morning line contenders, Win From Within and Crew Dragon, had a similar race, 1 back for Win With Win and 2 went back from Crew Dragon, who obviously came back to win after that race. But Crew Dragon had a little bit of a funny trip in that race, kind of broke a little slow and then kind of ran right up into traffic. And while Win From Within was breaking on the 12 pole, I mean, just cleared him so fast and ended up, I thought, getting a pretty cozy trip. And so I know the rail draw is good for Win From Within. The mile races at Tampa, if I remember, those don't start in the chute, right? It's the mile and a 16th and a mile and an 8th that start in the chute. Am I correct on that?
That is correct.
So I always feel like the chute, the inside horses have a way bigger advantage, because it's kind of becomes a 2.5 turn race. You're coming out of the chute, you turn halfway, but then you're only straightened out for like a 16th of a mile before you start that other turn. And so those horses on the outside, they just get marooned out wide. It becomes a real, real ground loss situation. So the fact that this one is a straight shot to that first turn, I think bodes well for the other speed to go up and go after Win From Within. And I just thought that would compromise this one's chances a little bit. And so Crew Dragon was one I moved up a little bit. And the other one I kind of liked was the 11 for Ian Wilkes, getting Lasix for the first time. I'm sure we'll talk about the Lasix strangeness that's happening at Tampa on Saturday. But, you know, just a horse who, you know, last time was on dirt and didn't fare all that well. The debut on dirt was okay, but two of the turf races were very good against maiden specials and ran in the Bourbon and kind of split the field after a bad start. That was that race Mutasabit came storming from way, way back. So it's definitely a race that should have set up a little better for Private Island. It might've just been a class situation. Maybe at that point, I mean, that's fall 2 year old too, right? So we're talking about a different horse at this point as well.
Chris, what did you, I know you have another horse that you're really interested in. What do you got?
Yeah, I do like Mira Mission. I really liked that horse last time. And I put a bet in, I had to go do some stuff, and I put a bet in, I think it was like 8-1 or on the morning line, or 10-1 on the morning line. And I came back and I was all excited because I thought, you know, found out the horse had won, and it paid 2-1. So that was kind of disappointing last time. But clearly the morning line wasn't very good in that race, and it might be off in this one, although maybe you're right, Scott. Maybe you do get to 6-1 if the horse goes. The horse I like is just right outside Mira Mission. That's Boreas, I think is how you pronounce that. I really like these horses who, you know, especially a Mike Maker horse that starts out on the dirt and it was clearly just a prep, and then they put it on the turf and it wins big. And now, you know, it's making only its second. So, that, you know, it's really like that last race was really its first start. And it's kind of, if you just kind of toss out that dirt race. And I just love horses on the turf who can win on debut, especially going two turns. So, you know, to me, this horse has a lot of upside. It's already fast enough to win if Blue Cat doesn't draw in. And, you know, it's a big price on the morning line because it's coming out of a maiden race. But, you know, these lightly raced 3-year-olds on the turf, you know, the maiden races typically are just as strong as you know, allowances and stakes races. There's really not that much difference. So I really like the 10 horse Boreas. If Blue Cat doesn't get in, if Blue Cat draws in those two, that'd be a great exacta, I think.
Well, I would agree with you on Boreas, and I like Mirror Mission, but this is a closely matched bunch. So I think I would go with Blue Cat if he gets in, Boreas, and maybe Crew Dragon, just because he's slower, but Junior Alvarado might, you know, I haven't watched the replay of that particular race, so I'm not sure, but it did look like, based on the numbers I'm seeing, that the Win From Within rode, it was a CFR of 10 on racingflow.com. So that's not like a super fast speed bias, but I think it does qualify as a downgrade if you won with a CFR of 10. So if they did have upgrades and downgrades for this race, I think they would downgrade Win From Within and they would upgrade Crew Dragon. So I might try to go four deep in this race.
You have anything else, Jason?
No, not particularly. I mean, I think we covered the ones I like. Like I said, I mean, my overall thought on the race is to be away from Win Within and kind of be away from a lot of the speed horses. It just looks like there's somebody I think is going to have to show a different dimension in terms of, you know, the 4, the 5, the 1, the 10, you know, if they're going to beat me in this spot.
All right. Well, we'll move on then to the 8th race. A lovely optional allowance, optional claiming 6.5 furlongs on dirt, purse of $31,250 for 4-year-olds and up. And Chris, why don't you get us started on this one?
Yeah, I like the 250 part there. You don't typically see that in the purses. $31,250. I like that. This is a tough race because, you know, you really can't trust any of these horses a whole lot, I don't think. So I was struggling to come up with, and I ended up kind of landing on two horses, and I'll give out the big price as probably my pod play, and that would be the one horse Florida Two-Step. This horse is kind of interesting because if you look back over its past performances, it's run some good races, but it typically never strings together good races, and its better races tend to be off some kind of a freshening, usually 2 or 3 months. About 2 months between races is when it runs well. But it typically can't string together good races. But it's for the first time ever, it actually ran two good races in a row and also two good races in the middle of a grouping of races, not off a freshening. And then they gave it a freshening, not quite as much as I'd like. It'd be nice if it's been about 6 weeks since its last race. It'd be nicer if it had a few more weeks. But to me, this horse is kind of peaked. It's in career form. You know, it could go back from that. It's never strung together three in a row. But the fact that it put together two good races, the last was, I think, clearly the best of its life. And they gave it a little bit of time. And it's in a race, you know, with a bunch of horses that have a lot of question marks. And you're getting 20-1. It's on the rail. And the rail at Tampa is typically pretty good if you have some tactical speed. And it looks like there's a couple horses on the outside that will go early. And this horse might, you know, trip out in the pocket on the rail at 20-1. And, you know, to me, it's just I really like the fact that they gave it some time off and then they stepped it up in class. So I mean, this horse deserves to be 20-1. Probably I get why it is, but it's the kind of horse that might run a big race in here. Even though it's got a history of bad races on its resume, if that makes any sense at all. So Florida Two-Step as a bomber in here is real interesting to me, the one horse.
All right. Florida Two-Step trained by David Van Winkle. Wondering if he's any relation to Rip. Jason, what did you think?
I thought you were going to go with Rob Van Winkle of Vanilla Ice.
I hate to say it, but... I don't know who that is. I have heard of Vanilla Ice.
Yeah, he was the famous rapper back in the 90s. But his real name's Rob Van Winkle. So I thought maybe that was where you were going.
Oh, it's the same guy.
So anyways, I kind of agree with Chris in the terms of the, you know, being a race, you can't really trust anyone. And my thought in those races is either to spread with prices or to just kind of knuckle down and make a pick and kind of stick with it, just because I hate, you know, there's not, to me, I hate the all button as a concept, but also like, I don't like getting into races where I don't have a good opinion. And so like, we're going to go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in the, you know, in the betting order just to get through it, 'cause it just annihilates your ticket value. So I ended up kind of liking the two, Ritmo De Quica, who's a second time starter here in the US for, Clement, and is cutting back in distance, which I think might be a good thing. The horse is showing being fourth and fifth early on at the first calls, which it was. But if you watch the replay, basically four of them went for the lead, and this one was the furthest out, breaking out in the 11 post. And so was kind of right in line with everybody early on, and then got cast out, you know, four wide is probably being a little generous, probably more like five or six wide, and then settled back, made a nice move, and then just flattened out a little bit. And so, you know, first start in a year, along with the trip, in an allowance condition. And now I think it's a little bit of relief. I thought was more than fair. You know, I don't know about the 9-2 happening. I don't trust the 7 horse at all, who I think, you know, like even on optics looks like the play, but it's just, I mean, this is just a horse that seems to give it up pretty routinely. And so I was not digging that one. And so I would probably be making a little bit of a stand here. The only other horse I kind of liked was the 10, and we can talk about that in the next segment.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go with, a third. Chris had the 1, Jason had the 2, and I am rolling with the 3, Fire Marshal Bill. He's a hard hitter. He may get a little bit more pace in this race. I think he's value at 8-1. He puts in good races all the time. He won 3 races ago. He is my least confident pick in the sequence, so I will definitely use some other horses. But I liked his last race. It didn't seem like the pace was that good, and he chased an even money favorite, and he actually galloped out right up to that favorite in the gallop out. So here's my official pick for this race. I do also like Florida Two Step. I wrote that he had upside. I like that last the two races that he had, and I never even heard of this jockey. So maybe we get that 20-1. I will definitely include on the ticket.
Yeah, I both the horses you two have picked, I think, also are contenders, especially the one that Jason picked, you know, the 2-horse Ritmo De Quica. The horse did have a really wide trip, and it was first off the layoff. You know, it certainly looks like it should be able to improve off that. The only negative I had on that is the horse ran with his head cocked
towards
the grandstands, and it never straightened out. And usually when they run that way, that, I mean, it could just be a habitual thing, but, and it might be something's bothering him, causes him to shift his weight that way. I just never like that when they run that way down the stretch with their head cocked. And it wasn't because the rider had his, you know, had the reins, you know,
it was the whole stretch.
Yeah. He just,
too. I mean, it was,
yeah. So, I mean, I didn't like that. And, you know, it's coming off a layoff, but it was only its first start in a long time. And you'd expect it to improve off of that. And the cutback is nice, I think. And there does seem to be a lot of speed with horses that are kind of habitual quitters that are being on the front end. So, you know, a lot to like there. But that just that way he ran, if he had ran straight, you know, with his head straight, I'd like him a lot more. Maybe I'm putting too much into that, but it really bothered me the way he carried himself in the stretch.
Chris, do you make much of Luis Saez jumps on board? Do you make much of it when a jock, because obviously Saez is coming over for the big races. Do you make much of the fact that he's, you know, taking him out on a horse like this in a race like this?
No, because I think he wants to, you know, get a feel of the track.
Yeah,
especially on the main track, because he's I'm sure he's got a mount.
He also hits at 22% with Clement, so that's
That's what I was gonna say. You know, it's always good to be in Christoph's good graces.
Yeah, it's certainly not gonna hurt the horse's chances, right? I think it probably means that, you know, they did kind of send him, and you want him to be aggressive cutting back, right? You don't want him to drop too far back, so it's a good thing. Saez helps, but you would think Clement, Saez, this horse second off the layoff, probably 9-2 is not going to happen.
Yeah, that's the other side of Luis Saez showing up is I think a lot of people are going to see that and obviously go to the window on it.
Yeah, so if this horse is bet down to the favorite, I mean he certainly could win, but I wouldn't be interested at all as a win bet. But I think it's hard to leave him off. I just wouldn't, I wouldn't single him or anything, put it that way, just because of that head carriage thing. It just, and he is, I don't know, that just not the way horses are supposed to carry their head when they're running, especially, you know, you'd like to see them lower their shoulder and stretch out nice and straight down the stretch. But so much for that. So that was kind of, and then you, Jason, said you had another horse that you liked in here, right?
Yeah, I thought the 10 was worth a little bit of look. You know, we were talking about Chad Lindsay earlier, and he'd been the regular rider for this horse because it had gone for David Van Winkle, who was training that other horse we talked about. You know, goes to kind of another low percentage barn, which I guess isn't great. I just think he's, from a tactical standpoint, he seems to be in a good spot in a lot of these races, and I just don't think he's that far behind a lot of them speed figure wise. So I thought he was one that could jump up into the exotics maybe at a little bit of price. I think he'll be more than 6-1 too. I was a little surprised at the line.
Yeah, usually I like kind of like the outside post on a horse with some tactical speed going 6.5. At Tampa, though, it seems to be hard to make to win from those outside posts. That was one negative on that horse. But certainly if it runs its best race, there's no reason why it couldn't win.
I just didn't think he was that far behind the 8, who's, you know, 5-2. And I know Safi's not doing great over Tampa. He's got a lot of seconds, though. So, I mean, it's, you know, you translate a few of those into wins and all of a sudden he's 20%. But to me, the 8 just seems to kind of lose ground in the final, you know, few yards each time. And that's just not what I want from a horse that's going to be a short price.
Yeah, you're hoping that they do bet that horse, right? Because it could win, but it certainly doesn't look like any sort of standout. And like you said, the 7 horse, Mr. Ankeny, seems to be fast enough to clear in here, but he never seems to hold on, and now he's going 6.5. And there is some other pace, like the 9 horse, you think they're going to try to go. I don't know if they can, but you figure they're going to try to send that horse as well.
I think you had another horse, Chris, that you, or was your other horse Ritmo?
Ritmo. Yeah, that was the other one that I was, I was just afraid he was going to get bet down. There was that, you know, there's that one negative, but I thought just from the, just from a number standpoint, I thought, you know, second off a layoff and he did have a tough wide trip last time and he made a nice move and hung. Everything about him I like, except
for the cocked head.
Yeah.
Which is what your main argument was, like, I don't like that.
Right. But what disappointed me is before I watched the replay, I liked that horse quite a bit. And then I watched the replay and I said, I just don't like the way that horse looks. Typically, I should trust the paper over my eyes. This is me personally. So we'll see. This will be a good, you know, test. The eye test versus what the paper says. So for me, typically, the paper is better way to go. But maybe this case, my eyes were right. It's enough to get me, you know, to lose confidence in that horse. So I will include him in the pick 5, but, you know, I won't single it or anything. I think definitely Florida Two Steps, probably a much better bet.
Well, I will add to a little fuel to the Florida Two Step fire. I just noticed that the last 2 wins, which are its only 2 wins, were both at this track. So the horse is 2-3 at Tampa. And that's, you know, that's just another positive to look at.
Yeah, let's hope it'll be 3-4 after this race.
The next race is the 9th race. It's the Hillsboro Stakes, a grade 2, 1 1/8 on turf. Purse of $225,000 for fillies, mares, 4-year-olds and up. Jason, where did you land here?
I kind of had 2 equal horses that I liked, so I'm going to default to the one that's the bigger price with the 6 How Ironic for Victoria Oliver. You know, the last race, obviously off the turf and still ran okay. You know, kind of split the field, but was making up a little bit of ground. I thought the effort in the Valley View with the decent pace setup was pretty good. And like I said, I think the price is going to be really big. And so I thought maybe one that was interesting away, because, you know, I mean, there's a lot of horses that make sense. There's a lot of good form horses, and I'm sure we'll talk about most of them here. To me, Magic Attitude was just so disappointing last time as a short price favorite. I know it was a grade 1 and this is, you know, not a grade 1, but like the setup was good and just didn't kind of have the firepower down the lane. And so I'm a little shied away from that one going forward. And I think that horse is going to be one of the ones that take money.
Okay. How ironic out of a dam named Sarcastic. Chris, what did you think?
There's definitely some irony in that. I hope everyone handicaps this race exactly like Jason, because I really like Magic Attitude. I thought the rail was dead that day. I thought the horse had an excuse at Keeneland. That was one of these dead rail Keeneland days. And the whole race before that, the horse looked sensational, and it's been really training well. And Arnaud Delacour is really good off the layoff. It gets the rail and it's a good closer on the Tampa turf. The one negative is the jockey Le Perou. He has a habit of dropping too far back and waiting too long to let horses loose in these turf races. But, you know, sometimes he puts good rides on. He certainly is capable of doing it. So I think Magic Attitude looks really good in here. You know, the question is the price. Will you get 9-2 on that horse? I don't know. There's another horse I like quite a bit in here as well that may also get better. I have to kind of watch the odds board. But I think Magic Attitude is very solid in here, although no, certainly not a lock. But I think I'm willing to excuse that last race, and the race before that was pretty impressive.
Okay, well, it's a tradition for me to pick Counterparty Risk on the pod.
You're two and for will, four then.
I will do so again. And this is what I said last time. She's slower than many of these. I'm still picking her because I just like the way she did it. I like the way she ran in her last three races. She is a little bit slower than Magic Attitude. I am going to go deep in the pick five, mm-hmm. but I'm going to take her because her last race was – it was a very slow pace. She did get a perfect trip, and like the rail just completely opened up for her to go on the inside. But you know, she didn't even break a sweat, and she was hit a few times by Johnny V, but no big deal. She galloped out best. I think she has upside, and I think with this pretty stout competition that she may go off at 3-1 or higher. So I think she has upside, and I would definitely use. I certainly don't want to lose to her. I will say though that I would go pretty deep here because all these horses being prices, I would want to use My Heart Belongs to Daddy, La Signore, Morning Molly, and Micheline. And I'm sure that's you guys have at least one of those horses as alternatives as well.
Yeah, Jason, jump in.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely like the 10 and the 11 as options. Micheline, I seem to have been right on her the two times she won at big prices, so she doesn't owe me much. And I'm a big Stidham fan. But, you know, again, I don't know that she's going to be 8-1. I just feel like she's going to take a little bit more money than that. But Morning Molly was one. I mean, she's just always in the hunt and obviously, you know, going up in class. But I feel like she's kind of earned her shot at a race like this with the, you know, the win out of Houston. The other horse I wanted to mention was Miss Tehran for Chad Brown. Obviously Chad's very good when he goes anywhere, but Tampa, he seems to really, really good. The visual for Miss Tehran was insane. I remember the race and Pete made the call. He goes, okay, let's see, where's Miss Tehran. And she was kind of bottled up and he goes, oh, here she comes. And she like came out of the pack and had one of those electrifying stretch runs that you remember. I mean, it was insanely impressive. And so I'm curious to see if she can repeat that. I feel like every time I find horses that have those amazing stretch kicks, they don't get duplicated necessarily the next time. And this is, you know, you're trying to close into better horses this time. It's a different track this time. It's, you know, after that big start last time. So as much as I liked Miss Tehran visually, I think I'd probably not include on pick four. It's just trying to think that it can't be replicated in that fashion this time.
Interesting that Miss Tehran is at least two races ago weighed in at only 905 pounds. And I only notice weights really when they're extreme. And mm-hmm. that's a pretty light horse for a mile and an eighth.
She had kind of a megahertz-y look to her, just that, you know, the chestnut color and kind of, you know, stout little body and just an insane kick.
Yeah, megahertz. I remember that. Oh. Philly was a tiny little rocket ship.
She
Man,
was so
she
cool.
Could accelerate.
So cool.
She would yeah. literally
His
blast
little
off.
Megahertz.
Yeah. You know, you should call a whole race, Jason, as Trevor Denman.
Oh, Frank's got me beating that department. The only time I've ever done an impression during a race call was of Gary Henson, the old Longacres announcer. And it was at Portland Meadows. Yeah, exactly. It was, and there they go. You know, it was funny because like five people got it and loved it. And then everybody else, I love to picture everybody else going, what the hell is that guy doing out there?
You know, you would think at Portland Meadows, they would recognize it.
Yeah. So. I mean, this was, 2013 Portland Meadows. So it's, 10 years after Gary died, and, 20 years since he'd been calling, but I got a few nice messages about it, but that's been my only, delve into the, I think maybe I've thrown a Trevor. There was a horse named something Trevor. And I think one time I said, moving like a winner, and, kind of did that, but nothing too serious.
All right. Well, we are digressing. Chris, I know you like at least one other horse in this race.
Yeah. I just one note on the Miss Tehran and Counterparty Risk Race. That race, I can't remember, somebody carried Miss Tehran like 8 wide on the turn and let Counterparty Risk zip on inside the rail. And Junior Alvarado, I thought, was just going to reach over and like pull the other rider off his horse for carrying him out really wide. So I don't think there's as much between those two horses as it looks like based on that race, because Miss Tehran definitely got that horse floating
out.
You mean
New York Girl?
Oh no, yeah, New York Girl. I got it wrong. Right, you're right. New York Girl. Yeah, sorry about that. You guys were talking about Miss Tehran. I had that name. Yes, New York Girl. Right, exactly. That New York Girl is better than she looks. She wasn't. I could argue she might have won that race if it weren't for the way she got carried out and just set it up perfectly for Counterparty Risk. So, between those two, there's not a whole lot of difference in the morning line right now. They're pretty close. So, I think the morning line's probably right. But if for some reason New York Girl were to float up in odds, she really ran better than it looked in that last race. So I just want to make that note. The other horse I like in here is the 4 La Signore, who is fast. She's already run fast. She's the fastest horse in the race. I mean, based on her past races. The only question is, will she fire coming off the layoff? And some of these other horses have upside that she doesn't really have as a 6-year-old. But, she's faced really good horses like Secret Message and Zafel, who we saw last week. And, she's got a really nice kick. And Brendan Walsh is really good off layoffs. I mean, he trains Zafel. And, she won off a layoff about, 5 or 6 weeks ago. This horse is really similar. So I do think she's going to run her race right off the bench. And if she does, there's no reason why she couldn't win. She's 8-1 on the morning line, which seems high. But, there's so many horses in here. We've talked about like Michelin and Counterparty Risk and Magic Attitude and New York Girl. So maybe you do, get 8-1 because the horse is coming off a layoff. So. That's the other horse I like in here is the 4 La Signore.
Okay, La Signore noted. And yeah, this is a tough race. I'm sure if David Aragona was doing the morning line on this race, he would say something on Twitter about how difficult it is. The favorite is listed as 4-1. The next race is the Florida Oaks. It's the 10th race. It's a grade 3, a mile, and a 16th on turf. Purse of $200,000 for 3-year-old fillies. And Chris, I have a feeling you'll be on the same horse as me in this one, and you get to go first and take the glory.
I don't know. I wasn't thinking about, maybe you're right. I'm not sure about this one because I didn't have a ton of confidence in here. Well, first of all, a key horse in this race, I think, is a 6-horse B Sneaky, who's, if they're actually in the race, they might be in it just hoping it comes off the turf as kind of an informal MTO. But if they really are serious about running on the turf, she has a lot of early speed, and she's could keep the 2-horse jouster honest. But if she scratches, the two is going to be really tough. It's going to be the favorite, and it's going to go to the front, and it just probably could dominate the race if the six horse doesn't go. But I'm going to assume the six horse does actually run, and maybe could soften up the two, who I still think is the one to beat. And if that's true, then the horse I like in here is, there's two, but the one I'll probably go with is the three horse Mia Martina, who is 2-for-2 for Grand Motion. It started in another barn, and probably, it looks like it was a private purchase after it won at Gulfstream Park West. And it came back and won nicely in its second start. And it, in both of those races, there was really no pace on, and it still managed to close into the slow paces and win the races. So I think it could run a much faster speed figure than it has. It drew a good post. It's got Leipero riding again, who has a tendency to drop too far back and wait too long to move. But with a good ride and a good trip, this horse, I think, could win at a price. Has a stable mate in here that's half the odds out on the in the 11 posts. And I think certainly between those two, I would, given the post, I would go with Mia Martina over the 11 Oyster Box, who's the entry mate. So if you really get that 8-to-1, that seems like pretty good value. There's another horse I like some as well, but I'll leave it at that and turn it over to Jason and Scott and see what they like.
Mia Martina, I just noticed, overcame a speed flow, a CFR racing flow number of 6. So she would get an upgrade if they did upgrades for Tampa. I'm 90% certain that she would get an upgrade. Every once in a while, I think that they'll upgrade or downgrade a horse, and they don't, but it seems pretty clear in this case. So you got that going for you too. Jason, where did you land?
Yeah, I think Chris made a good point. I mean, the question in the race is to joust her or not to joust her, right? I mean, it's going to be a logical favorite, but also, I mean, you see two monster open length wins for, I mean, it seems crazy that a horse was able to get that far in front through 25 and 48 at Gulfstream Park, but I know it was a good turf, so obviously that explains it a little bit. But I mean, this is the kind of horse I'd be willing to beat. I mean, a mile and 16th at Gulfstream is obviously a straight 2-turn, whereas this race, it has the they're in the chute, so it's a little bit of a different thing. And if I was playing a pick 5, I mean, I'm going to be pretty narrow in the first two races, and so therefore, you know, and I have the single with the DeQuaco horse, so I would be probably trying to beat Jouster here and try to, you know, create a little bit more value for the ticket and use a horse. Mia Martina was kind of the one that was atop my list, and so Chris, I'm copying him on the top pick. But I actually kind of liked the 8 a little bit as a option. Just, I thought the first, you know, effort getting IRAD on the first time was pretty impressive. I know it was against State Breds, but I just think a horse that's going to be running at the end, the Chad horse makes a lot of sense, the 10 domain expertise. And I actually thought Oyster Box also another good option. So to me, it just seems like there's a lot of horses who have that similar style of, you know, being fourth, fifth, being 3 lengths off and making a good run. But this race, they're all likely going to be 8 or 10 lengths behind. It's just a matter of whether the big favorite kind of stops, I guess.
Well, Chris didn't land on the horse that I liked. I'm kind of surprised, but I landed on Queen of the Green. And I not only did I land on her, but I'm probably going to single her in this race because I don't see any value in having Jouster. Even though I do think that is the biggest threat. She had trouble in her only bad turf race 2 races ago. She's circling back to her best, and she should run her best. So, you know, this is where I'm going to try to extract value out of the pick 5 by going with a 20-to-1 morning line horse. Now, I don't think she will be 20-to-1, but she could be 10-to-1, and that'd be a great single.
Yeah, I am. That's the other horse I like, Queen of the Green. I just think that Mia Martina had more upside because of how slow the paces were in her races. And like you said, she had to overcome the flow, but also just the figures you earn in these races where the pace is really slow on a turf, they're going to be really low because there's just no way you can run a fast race when you're crawling and for the first 3-6 furlongs of a race. I was just kind of thinking more on the upside, but certainly Queen of the Green at that price is one you definitely could include and could maybe bet to win. I just want to make one note on Jouster. It was a good track, and Timeform adjusts for the track variant on their fractions, so you can get kind of adjusted fractions. And the fractions for that last race were actually pretty quick if you go off of Timeform. So, you know, a lot of times, especially at Gulfstream, the raw fractions you've got to just ignore because they don't time the races right. And, you know, it depends on where the rails are and what the run-up was and all that kind of stuff. So that actually was pretty fast. It was coated in red in Timeform, Jouster's last race. So I think that was, you know, wasn't like an easy gallop around the track when it won that race. So that's worth noting. I think that horse really genuinely is a good horse. Since it's gone to the turf, it's looked pretty strong.
Mm-hmm.
But if Be Sneaky goes and does really push Jouster early, you are talking about Tampa Bay, where I think, you know, Gulfstream's definitely a little more friendly than Tampa in terms of front runners on the turf.
Anything else on this one, Jason, for you?
Nope.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was between Jouster and Queen of the Green. And if there's any way I can do a ticket with Jouster, but I just can't imagine it because I think Jouster is going to be very low price. So we'll just move on to the next race. The next race is the 11th. It's the Tampa Bay Derby, Grade 2, mile and a 16th on dirt. Purse of $400,000 for 3-year-olds. And Jason, what did you think here?
I went to kind of a goofy bomb. My heart is always with Gulfstream Park West. I got called in there a couple times and loved it. And I liked the 7 Moonlight Strike as a big long shot chance. Broke the maiden at GPW in the slop, but then came back to win going a mile at Gulfstream. They tried the Smarty Jones. The trip last time, it wasn't bad. I mean, the horse had some trouble. Cowan, who was the second place finisher, had all sorts of bother and kind of came out into Moonlight Strike a little bit, and then the horse was just flat. But, you know, Caddo River would be, I think, a very huge favorite in this race, but 17 lengths is, you know, obviously a ton. But I just thought potentially a horse that could, if able to be a little bit closer and get a cleaner trip, maybe at a big price. And the big reason I kind of shopped around was because I just didn't like the Sam F. Davis as a race. I didn't think anybody looked particularly great in there. I think a lot of people are going to go to Hidden Stash just because the horse started making up some ground at the end. And maybe it's a horse who hated the inside and it's a good thing it's drawn outside now, because down on the rail, it just looked like it was going up and down and kicked out late. But I just thought they were all kind of slowing down at the end there. And I wasn't a big fan of the race.
Okay. So nice price on Moonlight Strike for Safi Joseph, who's not doing well at this meet, but is doing well in general. Mm-hmm. Chris, where did you land?
Well, first of all, this race is not very strong for a Derby prep. These horses are, none of them, at least so far, have done a whole lot. And if you compare it to like the San Felipe at Santa Anita, I haven't handicapped that race yet, but I just going off the entries, you know, there's 4 or 5 horses in that race I think would be odds on to win this one. So just keep that in mind. So I would be hesitant to go for a short price in a field like this, because they're all, so none of them have really run fast races, and any one of them as a 3-year-old might be able to jump up. So I'd be looking for the horse that might jump up. So one interesting horse, unfortunately, I think it's getting some buzz, but it's the another Safi Joseph horse in this race, and that's the Puerto Rican horse, Super Strong, number 2, who I'll bring up a horse from the past. We've talked about one already.
Mr. Frisky?
Mr. Frisky, the Puerto Rican Flash, who reeled, I think, off like 13 straight races and was the Derby favorite. He lost in the Derby, but he did win the Preakness. You know, this horse maybe could be the next Mr. Frisky. I seriously doubt it, but you don't have to be Mr. Frisky to win this race. Horse has been training really well for Safi Joseph. It won its debut I saw Scott tweet out a link to the replay. I actually had watched it last night. It was kind of over a wet, fast track. The horse kind of broke mid-pack and just circled the field and drew off. So it was pretty impressive. But, you know, it was the total purse was for like $30,000 in that race and, you know, probably wasn't beating anything. But has been training well. There's no monsters to beat in here. I, you know, if it does get buzzed and get bet down, I lose interest completely. But if it gets overlooked, it's kind of the interesting horse in here. I have a few other opinions, but I'll leave it with that for now. The number two, Super Strong, might be the kind of horse with a lot of upside, especially in the new barn and making only its second start.
Well, three winners came out of that race. It's interesting that you can actually click on the running line and see the chart for the race. I like that horse, and I'm definitely using the horse. I think it will get bet, but you know I'm going to be playing the pick five, so I'm using it. But I'm actually going to go with the outside horse, sitting on go. The horse was fast as a two-year-old, stumbled pretty badly at the start of his last race. And I don't think I picked him in that race, but I did note that he had his best workout going into that race and he stumbled. And so you can toss that race. And, you know, since he won the stake as a two-year-old at 24-1 or so, he's been bet. He was bet in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. I think people are finally giving up on him, but now he has an excuse for his last race and there is a projected hot pace here and he's going to drop back. And I think now's the time to take him at 20-1 or higher. And I'm not worried about the posts because they're going to gun it up front and he's just going to be able to drop to the rail and make his run.
All right. What about Jason? Has Jason weighed in on this race?
I kind of gave out my long shot. I did want to ask you guys about the 11 horse because I feel like everything about this horse, the open length, sloppy, high figure win, like it's like the biggest no-no in the world to play those horses next time out. But the 8-1 like makes me almost intrigued. I mean, I know price can change our opinions on things pretty fast, but Pletcher is maybe not the best. It seems like I always like seeing his horse get a couple starts before they really take off. Obviously, he's good first, or I guess at the stakes level. There's just like to me, there's so many red flags for this horse. But then I'm also kind of like, decent price, decent option.
Well, he has a couple of very large negatives for me. Yeah. One is a big improvement from his first to his second race, and then going two turns for the first time. Mm-hmm. I consider that a big no-no. Also, that big race was a slop top. That's also a no-no, and it was a sealed track. So to me, this is a horse I completely want to bet against.
Yeah.
The only question is, what price will he be? And I'm going to look up on Sport of Kings to see what he's being bet down to, and he's 4-1. Now, we do know historically that on Sport of Kings and Public Handicapper, Pletcher horses always get bet. Some people just pick the Pletcher horse. But, I think it is – I'd be shocked if a Pletcher horse was actually 8-1 in this race, especially one with Saez mm-hmm. on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say I'm not as negative as you guys are on that horse, but I think it's probably the most likely winner, but not by much and not any kind of value at all at the likely post-time odds. So I'm kind of with you to some extent, but I'm not nearly as negative as Scott on the horse. But, he's certainly no standout, and he'll be under overbet, I think. We've talked about this many times. Sitting on go, I think, will be a nice play when they get to Kentucky. But when they're in Florida, I'm not going to touch that horse. Like I said, Dale Romans hasn't burned me yet on these horses. His three-year-olds, they run much better in Kentucky than they do elsewhere. And this horse is a great example. He was a good horse in Kentucky. He's been pretty bad since. And I think he'll be good again when they get back there. I'm not sure why, but I'm going to stick with that assumption in this race. But at 20-1, you know, I can't talk you off playing that horse because it's capable of winning for sure. If it runs its race, that's just the big if is, you know, if it runs its race.
Yeah, I mean, he has not won at two turns. That's also a negative. But I just see a good number, and I see an excuse for his last race, and it's also a projected fast pace. So
yeah, so I totally agree. Yeah, it's sort of like that Cape, whatever that horse was with his head cocked. Everything about him says
it
would be good, except the way he held
Ritmo, Ritmo yeah. de Cueca.
Yeah, good old Ritmo. Sitting on go, you know, on paper, for all the reasons you said, seems like a live long shot. I just, if it had a different trainer, I'd be a lot more interested. But at 20-1, you know, I'm willing to excuse something like that. You know, I'm not going to talk you off a long shot for one, you know, that fits when you can get 20-1.
I thought of you as I cashed last week on Attachment Rate, who won at Gulfstream.
Yeah, I actually kind of liked Attachment Rate. I'm not as negative with him on older horses as I am with the three-year-olds. His three-year-olds, they run good as two-year-olds in Kentucky, and then he ships them out, and they're disappointing, and then he gets back to Kentucky, and they start running again. That's just his pattern. I've seen it for so long.
And you are a pattern guy.
That's true. So, you know, Sitting on Go's fit the pattern perfectly so far, and that's why – you know, I'm waiting to be able to bet some of these horses when they do get to Kentucky. So, you know, for me, I would love to see Sitting on Go kind of get carried wide and maybe make a little middle move and get tired. And he's the kind of horse who'll be 20-1 next time he runs at Keeneland and could win. You know, so that's the kind of way I'm going to play him. There were two other horses in here I thought were kind of interesting as long shots. One will be a big price, and that's Awesome Jerry, who kind of ran up the track last time, but he kind of chased the pace and got tired, and that was against Greatest Honor. And, you know, a couple of the horses in that race came back and ran better next time out, like Papato. Is that the name? I'm trying to remember the name of that horse. Yeah. I think that ran Papato.
He's the one that ran by Greatest Honor, and then Greatest Honor ran by him.
Right. You know, he was in that race and he came back and ran pretty well. And, you know, to me, Awesome Jerry, the race did not fit him very well. And they take the blinkers off, which means I think they're going to try to get him to settle this time. And yeah, you know, he doesn't win a lot, but he has run some races that are good enough to win in here, especially if he improves. So with the blinkers off, you know, I think he'll be a big price. I'm looking, he's 32-1 on the Sport of Kings right now in with the picks that are in. And so, you know, as a bomber, I'd rather go with Awesome Jerry than like Sitting on Go. You know, they're both going to be big prices. I would probably rather go with the 6 and the 12, but they're both the kind you can play. I mean, there's a lot of negatives with Awesome Jerry. Clearly, his last race was terrible. You know, to me, he's kind of interesting. And the other one is the 10 horse Helium, who, you know, has never been on dirt and never routed. It's bred to route, but it's definitely not bred to run on dirt. But sometimes these horses can run on dirt. Cassie's pretty good at moving them from, you know, dirt, from poly or synth to dirt. Horse has been training really well. Really nice workouts. And it's races on poly or synth. I guess I call it poly track, but it was Tapeda, and it's synthetic. And they were both, you know, easy wins, just galloping wins. So the horse has a lot of upside. You know, that horse I think is kind of interesting. Let me see what the odds are on Sport of Kings for that one right now. 11-1. So, you know, if you get double digit odds on that horse, Helium.
The question is, will he rise to the occasion?
Exactly. Will he rise? Big balloons with Helium, right?
If he does rise to the occasion, they should be big balloons.
Yes.
I think we've wrapped up the pick five at Tampa. It looks like a pretty good sequence. It's somewhat playable. Do you guys have any other plays on the undercard or elsewhere? Because I know I have some at Santa Anita.
Jason, you have anything?
Nothing that's come. Who was it? I forget now. I'll be honest. I looked at so many races yesterday between all the three tracks that they're all running together right now. So I'm gonna pass on this one.
I'd like to hear what you really like at Santa Anita, Scott. I haven't got a chance to look at that yet.
Okay, well, there's I have three horses that are playable, not guaranteed win candidates, but the first one is in the seventh at Santa Anita. I'm really interested in Fantastic. He might be a win candidate. He may not, because Whisper Not, who's going to be the favorite, has a really good shot. But Fantastic is circling back to a number that can win. And if he runs that number, which I think he's got a good chance to do, at 12-1, he is worth using. And if I were in the Ultimate Betting Challenge, this is a race I would definitely be betting. I might also do a double going into the eighth race. I think Storm the Court looks like a solid winner at 5-1. It's just, he's circling back. He's run on turf the last couple of races and he's improved a little bit. So he's circling back to a top that looks like a stone cold winner to me. And then in the big cap, I'm interested in Kiss Today Goodbye. Now, I'm against Maxfield, who's the favorite. Even though I've always loved Maxfield, I think it's a little too much on short rest for him to be handling. But it's wide open after that, and I think Kiss Today Goodbye still has a little bit of upside, and just looks like he has a stout breeding to really enjoy the mile and a quarter.
I'm looking. So none of those races are on Sport of Kings. What was the morning line on Kiss Today Goodbye?
8-1 on Kiss Today Goodbye.
What about on Storm the Court?
5-1. And I think you'll get the 5-1 on Storm the Court, because people have kind of given up on that horse, and Extra Hope is in that race.
Storm the Court's been running on the turf lately, right?
Yeah, he has. So he's been improving a little bit on it, but it doesn't look like there's much improvement. His speed figures are just improving a little bit, and just looks like he's ready to run one of his top races.
So they're cutting back and going turf to dirt. That's interesting.
Yes,
that horse, I think, has been kind of mismanaged from, it won. It was sort of that surprise winner as a 2-year-old in the Breeders' Cup. But 3-year-old, they were doing all kinds of stuff. It was kind of clear he wasn't a Derby horse, and they kept trying. And then they started putting him on the turf. And so to me, sprinting on the dirt probably is his game. So that's an interesting one. I'll have to take a look at that race.
Yeah, the numbers look good for him. He is 0-2 at the distance. I'm not sure if he's ever won at sprint, but I know he's 0-2 at the distance. And let's see if I can get the he did win his first race at 5.5. So he should be able to handle 7 furlongs. He just happens to be 0-2.
Interesting. Yeah, it looks like a really good car at Santa Anita. They have, the Gotham at Aqueduct, the races we covered. I mean, it's a very busy, rich kind of day of racing. Hopefully the first of many good race days to come throughout the spring heading up to the Derby.
Yeah, and this is a day where I'm going to be spending the whole day right in front of the TV, playing lots of different tracks, including that NTRA free contest, which covers 15 races. So there's going to be plenty of action. It is a pick and pray, so you don't have to be like nailed to your computer trying to figure out who's going to win each race. As the day goes on, you put in all your picks and hope for the best.
Yeah, good luck to everybody. If you're on the tour, don't forget to enter that contest. And that's a great way to pick up tour points, especially early on in the year. You don't necessarily have to qualify for the NHC by winning a contest. You can get there by accumulating points throughout the year, and a real good opportunity for doing that is these free contests. If you can finish in the top 100, you can earn some pretty good tour points. So you don't have to you know, go crazy and pick bombs in every race. You could shoot for just some solid price horses, you know, and maybe you don't win the contest, but you pick up a few thousand tour points, and you do that three or four times and you're in the NHC without winning a contest. So that's not a bad strategy to take.
Not bad. Not bad.
Including Sport of Kings is another contest that's free, where if you can make it to the finals, you don't necessarily have to win, but if you finish in the top 10%, which would be the top 100 probably by the time we get to the finals, a great way to pick up tour points. So, you know, pick up, even if without any investment at all, you know, if you could do good in three of these free contests throughout the year, including Sport of Kings, you might make it to the NHC without, you know, just through those points.
Well, and the cool thing about the Sport of Kings challenge is that if you make it to the final round, there's 450 people in the finals, but because there are well over 1,000 people in the round one contests, it does pay to the top 10% of that 1,000. And so it's going to pay on the Breeders' Cup. If you can get into the top 100 out of 450, you're going to get some tour points. So that is something to consider. And, you know, heck, it's not only is it free, but the PPs are free too. So why not?
That's right. And this week you have three Derby preps to help you qualify in the March contest to get to the finals.
All right. Well, I would like to thank our guest, Jason Beam. Jason, thanks for coming on the show and handicapping with us.
My pleasure, guys. It was a lot of fun. I enjoy talking to both of you.
All right. Let's hope we have some winners and that we get to tag each other on some congratulation tweets. That will conclude show number 110 of the Sport of Kings pod. Good luck in the Tampa Late Pick 5, and please enjoy the Brooklyn Boogaloo Blowout.
I'll see you on Sport of Kings. Cheers.
Giddy up.